Today is May 2nd, and we are going to recap what we saw this past weekend between Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano. Epic, epic stuff. Corey Erdman is with us. We'll also talk about Shakur Stevenson and what is next. We'll take a look back at April, and we'll take a look ahead at May, which is headlined by Canelo Alvarez back in action this Saturday night on DAZN. Let's get into it. What is up, everybody? Dan Canova here, Inside Boxing Live, brought to you by John Boy Media. Today, we are going to be recapping the epic weekend that just transpired. Madison Square Garden was absolutely wild. I was in attendance. Katie Taylor picks up a controversial split decision win over Amanda Serrano. Shakur Stevenson over in Vegas picked up a dominant win. Nothing controversial about that win over Oscar Valdez. Joining us on the show this week, Corey Erdman of Boxing Scene, and also does a lot of work with DAZN. Great broadcaster, great friend of mine. He was with me at MSG, where we saw one of the best women's fights of all time. One of the best fights I have ever seen. A fight that should be in the running for fight of the year. To me, it's Conlon and Wood, and it's Taylor and Serrano. Just epic, epic stuff. And, you know, it's easy to get bogged down by the sport of boxing. The negativity of the sport, you know, the fights that we aren't getting, even though we're getting great fights now on a continuous basis, the politics, the headlines sometimes aren't always positive. But when you get a fight like Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano at Madison Square Garden, sold out, all the hype, and it lives up to the hype, you're reminded of why you fell in love with this sport. And I've seen a lot of fights in my day. I've been very lucky to have grown up here in New York City and been able to go to Miguel Cotto fights at the Garden. And I've been in some big ones. You know, Zab Judah comes to mind. You know, when he fought Shane Mosley, when he fought Paulie Malignaggi, very loud. But what I heard on Saturday night was something I've never heard before. The roar of the crowd, especially in that 10th round, that final flurry, and that 5th round where Serrano almost had Katie Taylor out of there. I've never heard the Garden like that. It felt different all week long, as Corey will talk about. It's just different. You know, I hate to use the vibes, but the vibes were good. It was positive. It was a celebration of women's boxing. The two ladies were so respected of each other. They had so much respect for each other, and you saw that in the lead up. And it was a different atmosphere. It was a different type of vibe heading into the Garden that night. And they delivered. Man, did they deliver. I actually picked Katie Taylor to win a split decision. And that was the case. But, you know, being there ringside, I thought that Amanda Serrano did enough to win. I thought she landed the cleaner, harder punches. She landed more power shots. I understand that majority of the punches landed came in that 5th round, when Amanda Serrano landed 44 of 114. But it was a close fight. You know, the more and more I watched it again, and the more, you know, talking to some people in the sport, there were a lot of people that had Taylor 96-94 and a lot of people that had Serrano 96-94. There were some that also could have saw it as a draw. You know, they landed within 6 punches of each other in 8 of the 10 rounds. You know, that just shows you how close of a fight this was. That 5th round was epic stuff. You know, Serrano caught fire. You know, she started to land that left. She started digging to the body. I don't know how Katie Taylor, first of all, did not go down, and how she recovered, you know, to have a decent 5th round, to find her legs in the 6th, to start landing like she did earlier in the fight in the 7th and 8th. That's how she won the fight. She was able to recover, because I thought maybe she won the first 2 rounds, and I thought the middle rounds were won by Serrano. And then Katie Taylor was able to recover, and she was able to box, get her legs back, and win a fight. An epic fight. And it just cemented her legacy as one of the best athletes to ever come out of Ireland, and arguably one of the best female fighters of all time. You know, it's not like the men's boxing where it's a deep, deep pool and it's years and years of history that you can look back on. You know, women's fights in New York weren't sanctioned until the mid-90s. To see how far it's gone from that day to what we saw on Saturday, it was epic stuff, and a fight that lived up to the hype, and then some. Great, great action. The promotion was phenomenal. I think DAZN, Matchroom, everyone involved, MVP Promotions, Jake Paul, Eddie Hearn, they did a great job. You know, I was here all week at all the events, and like I said, I'm sounding like I'm beating a dead horse here, but it felt big. It felt different. And it delivered. Also, over on the West Coast or in Vegas, Shakur Stevenson picked up a big decision win. We all knew how this fight was going to play out. Stevenson is just too damn good. He's impossible to hit. His precision was there, his distance, his power. You know, this guy's on another stratosphere right now. And as we'll talk with Urban, it's just like, who can beat Shakur Stevenson right now between 130 pounds and 140? You know, maybe a Lomachenko. They have to beat the drum for that fight. Love to see him in there with a tank. Love to see him in there with a Haney, obviously. But the politics get in the way of that happening. So we'll talk with Corey Erdman. We'll go over all the news and notes this week. We say goodbye to what was a loaded April. April was very, very good to boxing fans. Starting April 9th with Triple G and Murata in Japan. Triple G, I thought he looked good in that fight. And he did enough to win, obviously knocking out Murata, but that bangs the drum for a fight with Canelo. Canelo's got to do his job this weekend, and then we'll get a trilogy fight over there in Vegas sometime in September. Triple G at 40 years old still showed signs that he has the power, still showed signs that he has the jab. Maybe the defense isn't there, but that's how he started this month. And obviously, Sebastian Fundora and Erickson Lubin, which should be in the running too for Fight of the Year. Lubin, you know, just beaten up, bruised, battered by Sebastian Fundora, who was quickly becoming one of the biggest stars in the sport at 154. So that you could keep an eye on. April 16th, we saw Spence and Ugas. Spence coming back and just put an exclamation point on a performance for the ages where he threw almost 80 punches around. But the biggest thing to come out of that Spence Ugas fight on April 16th is how we're going to get this undisputed fight with Crawford finally. So that was April 16th. I mean, right from there, we went into Tyson Fury versus Dillian White. April 23rd, 95,000 fans at Wembley Stadium, an emphatic KO for Fury. He says he's going to retire. I don't believe it. That was a wild scene. And then right into this last weekend, what we just talked about with Taylor Serrano and Stevenson Valdez. Obviously, May is going to be huge with Canelo fighting this upcoming weekend. You know, we got Charlo and Castaño rematch March 14th. End of the month, it's Tank and Rolly. So there's obviously a lot to get to. The sport, I say it every week, but the sport is literally buzzing. There was so much positivity around the sport. Big fights are being made. We haven't even got into June yet, which is going to be absolutely loaded. So it's a good time to be a boxing fan. It's a good time to subscribe to Inside Boxing Live. But with that, let's get to our guest, Mr. Corey Erdman. All right, let's bring in our guest this week. You know him, boxing scene contributor, all-around great broadcaster, great friend of mine, my favorite Canadian. Corey Erdman is here, and we are coming off the heels of a huge fight at Madison Square Garden. Katie Taylor gets the split decision win over Amanda Serrano. I'm not done talking about this fight. I'm still buzzing, and I'm sure you are too, Corey.
Yeah, that was probably the loudest fight atmosphere I've ever been in, and obviously we've been in a lot of those in the past, but nothing compared to this. Like, it felt like, I mean, it felt like a celebration, and it was, and it felt like the voices of people who had been bottled up for too long, and it was all coming out. All of that emotion was all coming out from the crowd and from the fighters, and they gelled to make something really special at MSG.
You're right. It was a perfect combination of a lot of things. It was a perfect storm. You know, the biggest women's fight in the history of boxing, Madison Square Garden, two rabid fan bases. I've seen a lot of fights in Madison Square Garden for a Puerto Rican star by the name of Miguel Cotto. And I would say the loudest I have ever heard Madison Square Garden was Cotto Judah. Obviously, it wasn't around for Trinidad Joppy. You know, my father said that Trinidad Joppy was the loudest he's ever heard the Garden, but he said this was pretty damn close. I just remember turning around at different parts of the fight and just like looking over at you. It was you and Shields and just being like, dude, can you believe what is going on right now? Like all of the hype, all of the promotion. We hear this a lot in the sport. Best this, best that. You know, it's their promotional tools to sell a fight. Rarely does it ever live up to the hype. Rarely does it ever exceed the hype. And that was the case with this fight.
Yeah, and I want to be clear about something too. And by the way, it was really cool kind of watching that fight where I was, because I was watching with Claressa Shields. And Claressa in that moment was, she was just a fan. You know, she was freaking out just like everybody else. Like she was just astonished by what was going on and was very much kind of taking a backseat and just appreciating what Katie and Amanda were doing in there. But yeah, like that environment, and, you know, again, we're happy that this promotion happened. We're happy that, that women were put in the main events. But I want to make sure that the credit for what this environment was like is going to those fighters, right? Because like this was special because of how long this took for this to happen. Mm-hmm. Like it's not, it wasn't Jake Paul or Eddie Hearn that made that environment. Of course, they put this event on, but this was two women with exceptional fan bases and a special moment in time that was creating that. Like this wasn't what, and so what I'm saying is this wasn't something that was manufactured by two promoters. This was something very, very genuine and raw that we were seeing on Saturday night.
Right. The promoters, they got us to this point. You know, there was much talk about, oh, maybe they're too much in the forefront. You know, they made a bet. I thought the bet just made more awareness for the fight, but you're absolutely right. Like once it was, we're in that arena, you felt something different. You know, me and you have been around so many fight weeks. We've been around the sport for a long time. And, you know, you get into town and you have the public workout. You get into town and you have the presser. And then you have the weigh-in. And we've been for some big fights, you know, some big Canelo fights, some big Mayweather fights, some big Pacquiao fights, Cotto fights. But there was something different. You know, it was new. Like, you felt something different all week. It was more positive than ever. And you saw that with, I think it was started with the two women. You know, they took their, everyone took their lead. They were very respectful of each other right up until the fight began. They were in the ring looking at each other, man, a serrano mouth that this is crazy. I think even it blew them away how rabid the fans were on Saturday night and how big it felt. You know, it was up there, one of the craziest atmospheres I'd ever been a part of, and I was lucky enough to be at some, like, you know, make a Mayweather Pacquiao or a Mayweather McGregor, which were huge fights. It kind of like felt that, and the fight delivered more than those fights. So it was special.
Yeah, it and the environment, and it stretched out outside of the arena too. Like you saw the people outside of the arena with the flags, and to your point, Dan, so many times we travel all over the place for fights, and you get in town and no one in the vicinity of the arena knows that a fight has happened. They're like, hey, what are you here for? I'm here for a boxing. Oh, there's a boxing match going on? That's 9 times out of 10, that's the answer. Mm-hmm. But everyone, at least around that arena, knew that this was going on. And even the local businesses were getting in on the act. And this wasn't something that was put together by the promotional team or anything like that. Like, I was at a bar that had, like, a Katie Taylor, Amanda Serrano dessert, like a pink boxing glove. There was... you know, we're not going to endorse the sign, but there was an Irish pub not too far.
Yeah. I saw that on your Twitter.
Yeah, not too far from the arena with a rather profane sign in support of Katie Taylor. But, you know, you couldn't be around the arena and not know that something was going on this week. And you know, that's a barometer. Also, whether or not there are people selling bootleg T-shirts outside of an arena is an indicator of whether or not it was a big event. And we definitely had those. I saw more than one person hawking some bootleg wares.
Did you pick anything up?
No, because I wasn't carrying any cash, but I would have. I support local bootleggers.
Yes, you're a big T-shirt collector, too. I know that.
But yeah,
was saying the same thing. It's like, I want a poster from this fight. Like, I need something to commemorate that I was there. Like, they're not doing credentials anymore because they're too easy to replicate.
Yeah,
so they gave all of us those bracelets. And that's not as cool as, like, hanging off your you know, at home. I have all my old credentials, like a bracelet. Come on, we got to do better than that. But what a night. Obviously, the buildup was epic. And, you know, sometimes when you're in the arena, you kind of say, like, wow, this is wild. And you hope that it plays off on the screen. And maybe sometimes you get caught up that you were there, that it makes it a little bit bigger than it actually was. But that's not the case. Like, and I was seeing a lot of my replies on Twitter of people saying that it sounded loud through the television. They wished that they were there. So I think the promotion, they did a phenomenal job. The ladies obviously took it from there and put on one of the best fights of the year. I mean, we got to start talking about this as fight of the year, regardless of male or female. Let's talk about the actual fight now. Really close. Before the fight, I thought that Taylor was going to win a split decision. Obviously, she did. But, you know, leaving that arena, I thought that Amanda did enough to win on the rewatch. I could see how it could be 6-4. Either way, both women landed within 6 punches of each other in 8 of the 10 rounds. That just shows you how close the fight was. But, man, they were going at it from the first bell to the last bell.
Yeah, the fight lived up to like all of my, greatest wishes for what the fight would look like. I had really high expectations for it, and I was on Chris Mannix's podcast prior to the fight, and I predicted a draw because how I saw the fight unfolding, and again, it was wishful thinking, was exactly kind of what we got in so many spurts, which is these frenzied exchanges that are really difficult to score. And when those happen, yeah, you get judges kind of going each and every way. I mean, I couldn't have imagined that the action would look quite like that. I wasn't actively scoring again because I just didn't have a scorecard in front of me. I wasn't doing that actively, but I was in my mind thinking at the end of the fight that was either a draw or maybe 6-4 Katie. That was
Okay.
my feeling, but I didn't think that 6-4 Amanda was inappropriate. Like you, I think that 6-4 either way or
Yeah.
a draw would be perfectly fine. I haven't gone back and watched it quite yet. I'm still kind of coming down from it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that even on the rewatch, I'll probably come to the same conclusion.
Yeah, the first couple rounds, I thought Taylor was boxing beautifully. She was circling away from the left of Serrano, and she was picking her off. And I knew it was going to be that type of fight. It was going to have to play out like that, where it was Serrano's pressure versus the precision of Taylor. And I would say the first three-ish rounds, I thought Taylor was doing a good job boxing. I was like, oh, if she fights this fight the entire one, she's going to, run away with this. Then came the fifth round, and good God, Amanda Serrano threw 114 punches in 2 minutes. She landed 44. She got her Katie Taylor in that corner and just didn't relent. But that right there was, to me, the turning point of the fight, because from there, I thought Serrano got a little gassed, rightfully so. She threw 114 punches in 2 minutes, and that's where somehow Katie found her legs and was able to get herself back into the fight. And to me, for her, that's stuff of legends right there.
Yeah, it is. And I wrote about this in my piece on Boxing Scene, which just went up today. If you're listening on Monday, it was posted on Monday, which is that Katie did something that only, really special fighters, really special athletes can do, which is, we see fighters win rounds and win fights after they got hurt. But Katie did something which is even more special, which is that she managed to win rounds while being hurt. Because there were rounds that Katie was winning after that fifth round where she was still not entirely there. Her front leg was never quite the same. There was like a little wobble in it from there on. And she managed to muster the few attributes that would still work, which is that her legs are otherworldly in terms of their strength. We saw it in the final 20 seconds of that fight when her knee dipped. She's doing basically like a pistol
Yeah,
squat to
but that
stay on her
far.
leg that far from the canvas, and that fight changes. She stays up. She still had enough power in her legs and a well-timed jab such that she was able to win rounds while still hurt in those final five rounds, which is absolutely remarkable.
No judge gave Taylor, or excuse me, Serrano a 10-8 round for that fifth round. That could have been a big difference in the fight. And also that last flurry where Taylor's knee almost hit the canvas, that would have been a big difference. That's how close of a fight it was. Obviously, there will be a rematch, but man, I just can't believe the resilience of Katie Taylor. I can't believe the resilience of Amanda Serrano too. But there was also a discussion about the 2 minute rounds. I mean, it's something we're gonna get into. It's not gonna go away. I felt where you can't just have it for some fights and not for others. Like for this fight, I felt, you know what, I wish there was one more minute here. But it's also because it was a fight of this magnitude. Like you can't just pick and choose where you want 2 minutes to be, where you want 3 minutes to be. But it's interesting. Because if there was the 3 minute rounds, maybe Katie Taylor doesn't survive that fifth. If there was 3 minute rounds, maybe Amanda can pick up a knockout. So that's something they're going to keep an eye on. I know a lot of the women fighters that were there, Michaela Mayer, Sonisa Estrada, were all tweeting at the WBC about making it 2 to 3 minute rounds. Where do you exactly stand on that?
Women should have the choice to fight 3 minute rounds. So like I at this point, like the science that the WBC has been trotting out there has been shot down basically again and again. And the crux of it is, they're saying something that's so obvious that doesn't just pertain to women, right? They're saying that women in their estimation are more susceptible to concussions, which by the way, other studies have shown that when they looked at male boxers and women boxers, there wasn't really a significant difference after X number of rounds in terms of how much damage was accumulated. But they're saying something is very obvious, that less boxing is better for your brain. You know, that's the reality is that if you want a perfectly functioning brain, boxing is a bad thing. Okay, we all understand that. But then the same would be true for men, that men in theory would sustain fewer concussions if they fought 2-minute rounds as well. So the point of equality is for everyone to have those same options. And then the bigger issue is that because women's boxing is 2-minute rounds, a lot of people have used that to dismiss it as a lesser sport because they're not fighting quite as long. And then people are using that to pay women less as well, because that's they're true. Saying, oh, well, they're in the ring less, so we can pay them less. Like, it's just feeding the people who don't want women's boxing to excel. And the WBC never responds to the criticism of their studies. They've just kind of been holding on to these, forever and ever, when it just continuously gets disproven over and over. So, they have been a massive hurdle, and maybe the main hurdle in preventing women from fighting 3-minute rounds.
Maybe you do know the answer to this, maybe you do not, but why is it just the WBC that's getting the flack here?
Well, I think they have been the ones most vocal about it, right? Okay. Like, they are the ones that had the junk science, effectively, that's been floated out there, you know, talking about menstruation. And I think they cited that they feel that in the study they put out in 2014, that women don't have the same endurance capacity as men, which has obviously been disproven when we look at things like ultramarathoning. When you increase the distance more and more and more, men and women basically equal out. It's not an endurance thing. This is not a thing. But they have been the most vocal about it. And they've used it to say, hey, we are the ones that are protecting women. Mm. And I think that in a sense, the WBC has kind of backed themselves into a corner a little bit too, where maybe they don't want to back up on this because it might be a little bit humiliating that they've been this, this staunch in their beliefs at this point, to admit hey, maybe we're wrong, maybe we found some different studies that are saying something different. They don't want to do that. But yeah, I mean, that is the reason why, they are the ones who are taking the flak for this.
There are cases to be made for 2 minutes. There are cases to be made against 2 minutes. There's no doubt that was 20 minutes of just full throttle. And who knows, maybe with 3 minutes, the fight doesn't look like that. But I would like to see a change. I switched over. I was maybe on the side of 2 minutes is fine. 20 minutes, it breeds for a more exciting fight. But there was something about that night where, 10 2-minute rounds just didn't suffice for me. Like, these two women needed to get in there. And maybe it's 12 2-minute rounds. Maybe there's a compromise that can be made. But I would like to see something change there. Let's go over to what we think is going to be a rematch. They're talking about maybe Ireland. I know MSG has put in the pitch to get it back here. I wouldn't be shocked if that's the case. I think it doesn't go to Vegas. I think it's either going to be somewhere in Ireland, maybe not Puerto Rico, but somewhere in Ireland. Maybe if Amanda would have won, it would have been Puerto Rico. Somewhere in Ireland, maybe back in New York. But if it's in Ireland, I mean, Amanda Serrano is going to have to go for the knockout there, because that's going to be tough to get a decision.
The rematch to me is fascinating, because I feel like, in my mind, I question whether that is the best that Katie Taylor can possibly do. And I question whether Serrano has another level that perhaps she can hit. You know, it's kind of what I was thinking after Charlo Castaño, for example, mm-hmm. right? I feel like Charlo has more ways that maybe he can improve to make that second fight look a little bit different. I kind of feel the same way. I wonder if that is kind of the absolute peak of Katie Taylor, and if maybe we haven't seen the absolute best of Amanda Serrano, if maybe there are adjustments for her to be made. And with the additional time, maybe sitting in and around 135, as opposed to literally eating her way up to 135. She was eating bacon, egg and cheeses and burgers to get up to 135. If that rematch looks a little bit different. As for where it could go, I mean, yeah, it's Ireland would be extraordinary if they could do that. You know, we all understand some of the barriers.
Do those barriers exist? If you don't know, it's the MTK is completely gone. Like, it was kind of like fitting that their Twitter account disappeared the same day as the two ladies stepped in there, and Katie Taylor obviously has been prevented from fighting in Ireland because of MTK's presence there, and they no longer exist. So that hurdle is essentially gone, as far as we know. We don't know for sure. I mean, it's a very fluid situation, but that would be a some scene, you know. And then when you win, you get to call the shots like that. They have negotiating power here, but there will be a rematch, without a doubt. I mean, these two ladies have to fight again. I would not be shocked if there's a third fight. That's the type of stylistic matchup that this gave us. I mean, you know, there's 100% going to be more installments of these two ladies.
Yeah, can we do Yankee Stadium? Could we have a Cotto Foreman all over?
Right, were you there that night? That was wild.
I was not there that night. I was watching that one on TV.
That was a scene. I wouldn't be surprised if it ends up back in New York. I mean, it worked out well. I mean, it was 20,
kind of neutral ground for both of them too, right? Like it's good. You know, rather if you're in Ireland, and it would work because she's such a massive a figure in Ireland, but you're leaning entirely on Taylor and her supporters for that audience. Again, I don't think they'd have any trouble, but in New York, you can kind of have both fan bases on neutral ground.
Well, that's the reason why I thought it was so loud in there, and had a couple people chirping at me like, oh, you obviously never been to a Cotto fight. I was like, yes, I have. Obviously, you haven't been to a Trinidad fight there, but the difference is like you said, you have two fan bases in attendance on Saturday night. Like, I'm not saying that Cotto fans weren't loud, but when Cotto fought when Cotto fought a Judah, when Cotto fought a Mosley, it was 90% Cotto fans. So when you have two different fan bases going at it, it was like a fever pitch. You know, I have my headset on when I'm doing the CompuBox, and I couldn't hear a damn thing. Like, the fans were coming through. It was a frantic, frantic atmosphere. It was everything that's right with boxing. When boxing is done right, you get what you saw on Saturday night, and to be honest, I might be a little biased here. You can't. It's the best spectacle you can put on sports.
Yeah, and we keep forgetting too, just how great both of these fighters are. Like, again, Serrano's accomplishments: 7 weight classes, world titles in 7 weight classes. Katie Taylor being undisputed and being a vanguard for women's boxing. Not like even when we do get great fighters in the ring, they don't always produce, they don't always mesh well, right? I mean, the Mayweather-Pacquiao is obviously the kind of like that glowing example. If you get two kind of generational greats in the ring together, it doesn't always create something special like that. But when you get that combination of things, when you have generational greats who also produce that kind of fight, it doesn't, you know, there are a few things in sports that are better than that.
Yeah, even like go like Trinidad De La Hoya. I mean, that was a fight that was marketed as best versus best, fight of the millennium, and didn't quite live up to the hype. So when you have something like this where you're hyping it all week long, you're throwing around words like biggest fight ever in a sport that's been around for 140 years, and then you leave that garden with a feeling of, wow, I saw something tonight that I've never seen before. I felt something that I've never felt before. I mean, it was a special, special night, and I think we're going to get more of them between these two ladies in the future. Awesome, awesome stuff. It was just phenomenal. Like, I'm still not ready to move on, but we're going to move on. Shakur Stevenson, Oscar Valdez over in Las Vegas, a wide decision win for Shakur Stevenson. His streak of outlanding his opponents did come to an end, but it was a wide, wide points when he picks up another belt. I wouldn't be shocked if he finds himself in pound-for-pound lists now. This is kind of how we all saw this fight playing out, just a stylistic mismatch for Valdez, who fought, you know, valiantly, but just didn't have enough for Shakur Stevenson. Stevenson is the future of this sport. I could see him, you know, catapulting to the top of that pound-for-pound list one day. Just a virtuoso performance from Newark's finest.
Yeah, and I guess the question now is, like, for whom is Stevenson not a stylistic mismatch, right? Like, for boxers like that, for guys who can box the way that Stevenson does, usually people say, oh, well, at a certain point, just, you know, outlandish pressure will eventually break them down. Well, that's what Valdez tried. And who's better at 130? Who's more equipped than Valdez, you know, the second best in that division, to put that on Shakur Stevenson? And he couldn't do much with him. You know, if there is going to be a style matchup for Shakur that would work against him, in my mind, it almost has to be someone who could box better than him. Right. And who is that? You know, for me, right now, if you're looking at the options for Shakur Stevenson moving forward, for me, the juiciest one is Lomachenko.
Absolutely.
If they can make that happen, right? Lomachenko at 130 is probably his toughest test that's reasonable right now. And beyond that, it's Shakur moving up to 135 with all those other names. You know, it's which is cool to think about too, because for 2 years or so, we kind of talked about that foursome at 135 of those young stars of the Garcias and the Haneys and Lopez, and then the other guys in the mix, Gervonta Davis, of course. Now it may not be that long before Shakur is suddenly in that conversation too, and he's talking about fighting all those guys because, yeah, he's going to run out of dance partners really quick, and he's good enough to dance with anyone in that neighborhood.
He has talked about wanting to unify the division even more, become undisputed. Mm-hmm. Kenichi Ogawa has the other belt, IBF. Roger Gutierrez has the WBA strap. There are some hurdles to making those fights. They're not exactly marquee fights. If he wants to go that route, it's there. I agree with Shakur 100% that Lomachenko is the money fight for Shakur Stevenson. I'd be kind of shocked to see it next. I can't see him going from, you know, Herring, you know, to Valdez right to Lomachenko. I mean, we've seen how Top Rank operates. We've seen how all promoters operate. You know, let's let that kind of marinate for, you know, lack of a better term there. But that's the fight. Whether Lomachenko stays at 135 and Shakur jumps up to 135, or whether they can do that at 130 with Lomachenko going back down. He has spoken about how he wants to unify 135 Lomachenko. He still has his sights set on that. He's still in the Ukraine. It's a very fluid situation. But, I mean, if you take a look at it, Haney and Kambosos are going to be locked up for at least the next 12 months, maybe 10 to 12 months. Gervonta Davis, he's on an island by himself. We don't know what Gervonta Davis is going to do next at 135. Like you said, we're kind of running out of big names for Shakur, and it seems like he wants big names. So it makes sense from that standpoint, and I also agree with you that Lomachenko can box. Lomachenko can still hit. He's got some of the best defense. He's still very precise. He still has the great footwork. That right there, that fight would be something special between Lomachenko and Shakur.
Yeah, and I do think that they could get those fights made, you know, with Ogawa or Gutierrez if that's what they want to do to have Stevenson chase undisputed, because Stevenson's a big enough name that I think, you know, the handlers of Ogawa and Gutierrez would rightfully understand, like, okay, there's nothing bigger for them than to go and face Shakur at this point if they're willing to wage those bouts. I think they could get that made, and that's also not a, you know, those aren't exactly fights that make you salivate, but at the same time I can understand how they could market that as Shakur's last two steps to, you know, full-blown undisputed. They can market that a little bit while we're waiting for someone like a Lomachenko, and I could see them running a promotion like that where Lomachenko is kind of, you know, he's on the poster, he's up there, the bat signal's out there, but he has these belts to collect first. I could see them putting that together, and I would understand why they would do that.
Yeah, Shakur's destined for the bigger weights. He's a big 130 pounder. He looked huge on Saturday night. Could see him one day at 135. He gets into the mix, you know, with the Gervonta Davises, with the Devin Haneys, George Kambosos, how that all plays out. It's interesting. You're right, because I always said during the early days of Stevenson's career, it's like, you know, he's never mentioned with those four, quote-unquote, four kings. It's because he never had a clear rival. You know, you had Lomachenko was constantly circling Teofimo. You know, Gervonta and Ryan Garcia were constantly calling each other out. Whenever they do media scrums, whenever they do any media, they're also bringing up each other's names. So Stevenson didn't have that. You know, he didn't have a natural rival, but now he has just kept winning, kept looking spectacular, and now he's put himself in the forefront. He might be the best of the whole bunch. You know, sustainable skills, defense, you know, accuracy. He's now marketable too. I know some fans were upset with how the fight ended when he let his foot off the gas, but he still threw, I think, 55 punches around, which is up from his previous fights. He's giving you enough offense, but he's also giving you that, you know, I hate to use that, you know, talking about Mayweather, but that's how he fights. I mean, he fights hit and don't get hit. And right now, he's showing that, and that is Shakur Stevenson. So it's interesting to see what's next for him. But also this weekend coming up, are you going to be in Vegas for Mr. Canelo Alvarez?
Yeah, I'll be calling the undercard. I will be there, so I'll have a pretty good seat.
Yes, tough fight. We're gonna get more into it on Thursday's pod, but I'm starting to, you know, wind down from Taylor Serrano, wind down from Shakur, and just briefly look at some numbers for Canelo Bivol. I see there being a close fight. Close fight for the first couple of rounds. It's gonna, to me, it will kind of mirror Canelo versus Kovalev, but I think that Bivol is a little more active, a little more obviously in his prime, has a really good jab. I think it's gonna be a close fight for the first maybe 6-7 rounds.
Yeah, I can kind of see it the same way. Like, I think that Bivol is an interesting stylistic test for Canelo. You know, I know that some people are kind of down on this matchup because Bivol in his most recent bouts, you know, hasn't been exactly thrilling. He's been in against lesser opposition. And I think that Bivol, or maybe my hope for Bivol, but what I'm thinking about him is that he can kind of fight down to his opposition a little bit. If Bivol thinks that he can just kind of jab his way to victory, that's precisely what he's going to do. But Canelo is going to make him do quite a bit more than that. But to your point, I do think that there will be stages in the early rounds where it will look a lot like Canelo and Kovalev, where Kovalev was basically trying to jab his way to victory. He wasn't taking a ton of chances. He wasn't really throwing his right hand a ton in that fight. Bivol, I think, has kind of a snappier right hand maybe than Kovalev does, and maybe will want to use it a little bit more. But in the early rounds, I think it'll be Bivol trying to jab his way to victory. And then that's when we're going to find things out, because right. Canelo is going to make him work. And then how will Bivol respond? Can he tap in to those other skills that he has, those other tools? Are they still there? That's what we're going to find out. Canelo is going to answer all those questions for us.
He's going to hammer him to the body late, Canelo. That's how I see this fight. You know, close for 5-6 rounds. Canelo, his numbers against fighters that are 6 foot or taller, it's absurd, because he's in perfect range to land those body shots. That's how I see it right now. Obviously, I'm going to have to dig in a little deeper and take a look. I think it's going to be an awesome fight. I think, you know, Canelo jumped up to 175 after what he did at 168, taking on a legitimate champion. This isn't Sergey Kovalev. This isn't washed, drunk Sergey Kovalev coming off of a fight, you know, a month before this. This is a legit champ, and above all, and a guy that can really box and has power, too. That's going to be awesome, man. You're going to be on the call.
Yeah, I'll be on the call for the undercard, and then I'm just going to stay in my seat. I'm just going to stay about 2 inches from the ring, unless someone wants to kick me out.
What a run the sport is on right now, from what we saw this past weekend in New York and Vegas. Back to Vegas for Canelo. Next week, we got Charlo and Castaño, Tank and Rolly at the end of the month. So many other fights in between. June, absolutely loaded. It's our busy time, Corey. Appreciate you coming on the show. Enjoy Vegas. Enjoy the call. Go check Corey's workout at boxingscene.com. He has a really, really good story right now on Taylor Serrano. So, all right, man. I appreciate the time, and see you soon.
Thanks, man. Sorry I couldn't see you at Jack Doyle's. Your party was too packed.
That party was absolutely. My dad was there. Aris was there. We were getting after it. The vibes were so good leading from MSG into that bar, and I expect them to continue for the next couple of months. Thanks, Corey.
Take care.
All right, special thanks to my guy, Corey Erdman, still buzzing off what we saw at Madison Square Garden. Great stuff all around. Shakur Stevenson doing his thing, and now we set our attention to Canelo Alvarez and Dimitri Bivol. A fight that I think is going to be close. I think this is Canelo's toughest fight since the Golovkin fights. I really do. I think Bivol is a guy who fights up to his talent. Obviously, he hasn't looked good in his last couple fights, but now on the biggest stage of his career, he gets Canelo Alvarez. And Canelo, man, I mean, in boxing, we kind of give him too much praise. Some people say that, but no one's doing what he's doing right now. To clear out 168 and from there go up to 175 and fight a legit champ like Dimitri Bivol, it's wild. It's absolutely nuts, so we have to appreciate Canelo fight weeks while they're here. I think the guy is obviously pound for pound number one in the sport right now. He's carrying the sport on his shoulders, but he's got a tough fight for him. Really, really tough fight for Canelo Alvarez, and if he wins, we get a third fight with Golovkin, which Canelo has said numerous times that's for the fans. It's not really for him. He says it's for the fans. So a lot to look forward to. We'll be back on Thursday with another podcast getting deep into Canelo. And above all, keep it locked to Inside Boxing Live. Don't forget to subscribe to the JM Boxing page over on YouTube. We're going to have some fun stuff with some special guests that might be coming through the studio. All right, guys, we'll see you next week.